Well, an icon. I've never been told I was an icon before, but there are lots of chicks on here. And a lot of times we even get a buzzing sound that reminds people to turn over the chicken. So anyway, my name is Chick, and I am one grateful recovering nicotine addict. And I've been home today all by myself, and really had a wonderful day doing a lot of nothing, which I do a lot because I'm retired. But I sat on the couch a couple of hours ago, and I thought back 9 years ago. 9 years ago, it was around 8 or 9 o'clock at night, just this time, and it was snowing like crazy out. And tomorrow, the next day rather, was going to be my 20-year anniversary of not drinking and going to meetings. And it was snowing, and my anniversary was the next day. And I think I celebrated early on the weekend. I'm not quite sure. I can't remember where I probably celebrated Friday at noon in the group that I went to. So I was sitting on the couch, and I went to grab my cigarettes, and I noticed I only had 7 or 8 cigarettes in my pack. So I was right to anger, because my plan was to not leave the house the next day because it was snowing. And I just decided, you know, I'm so annoyed because I'm going to have to travel 10 miles to go buy cigarettes, because I used to buy cigarettes at this place. Because I used to smoke clove cigarettes. So I would have to travel 10 miles to get my clove cigarettes. But during this month, I had not bought a carton like I normally did, because I decided I was going to quit, no when. I had major bronchitis during the month, and I was coughing and peeing my pants, and crying because I couldn't smoke. And then I had to be miserable and go to the doctor and get antibiotics and cry and pee, and here I was, snow coming down, and I had 7 or 8 cigarettes left. And I'm like, this is not going to get me through my 20th anniversary day of the other fellowship, because it was quite a celebration and I needed a lot of cigarettes to get through that day. And bing, I got this big brainstorm. Why don't I quit smoking? In the middle of February, I typed Smokers Anonymous into the my Google website, and lo and behold, I was directed to Voices of Nicotine Recovery, and it said to download Pal Talk. So I download Pal Talk, and I picked the name Chick 1988 because that was the year I quit drinking, and then I don't remember doing anything else. Oh, I did go to the Nicotine Anonymous website, and I ordered the book, and I wanted a meditation book, and the only meditation book at that time was 90 days and 90 ways. So I got 90 days and 90 ways because I knew I could read a meditation every day, because that's how I did it in the other fellowship. And I knew I could have the book. So I sent away for them earlier in February because I knew I was getting close to quitting. I had quit the two previous years the same time because I always got bronchitis in February. I always spent a lot of time coughing and peeing my pants, and I just knew the time was near. And so with seven or eight cigarettes in my pack, I decided, why don't I quit the same time I quit drinking 20 years before? And I quit drinking at 2 o'clock in the morning on February the 26th, 1988. So on February the 26th, 2008, I decided I was going to quit smoking. Now, I had about 3 hours, and I'm one that doesn't, I didn't know if I could fit in all of these cigarettes in this period before I went to bed, you know, because I was trying to, you know, spread it out more, and now I only had 3 or 4 hours left, and so I wanted to go. I didn't know if I would be ramming it, but you know what, I did, and for whatever else I was doing at that time, I have no clue. I can tell you that prior to putting that cigarette down, I had opened up the book, because it took a couple of weeks for it to come, and I remember reading that I was a slave to nicotine. And that infuriated me, because I'm the independent woman who depends on no one. So, telling me that I'm a slave to nicotine, well, that made me more angrier than I usually was. And I was always angry. So, you know, I continued to smoke those. And lo and behold, the last cigarette I lit up, about 10 minutes before 2 in the morning, I savored every last inhale and exhale. And with the last drag of that cigarette, I looked up to the ceiling and I said, I know I can't do this alone, so I'll be expecting some help here. And that was my way of praying. I just have such a sincere way of praying. It's so loving and accepting. But I put that cigarette out 9 years ago, and that was it. And if I could even begin in the next 30 minutes or so to tell you what's happened to me in the last 9 years, I can't even explain it. You know, I just realized that I skipped my whole smoke-a-log, and I'm so glad I did, because it's not going to do anyone good. You guys all know about smoking. So I'm moving right into recovery here. And what I did, and this is how I got sober and stayed sober. So, the next morning I got up and I somehow went to Pal Talk. Now, I don't recall any of this Pal Talk stuff at all. I'm not a big techie. I did do I used to converse with my minister because I used to attend a church. And my minister and I were really, really tight. And we used to do IMs back and forth with AOL. I can't even remember what it's called. But she was an AOL person. And we used to spend hours typing back and forth. And she's a very, very quiet person. And I learned so much about this woman. And we were, I got to tell you, even though she's a minister, we were toe-to-toe with spirituality. Totally different beliefs. We so valued each other's belief system. And I did take a Bible course with her when I retired. So that's about the only thing I did on the computer besides emails. And I did email friends and family. So that's all I knew about the computer. I don't even know that I surf the web. I don't know about that. I didn't know anything. So here I was in Vonar. I don't know when I went into the room. I'm sure it was 11 o'clock meeting in the morning. I'm pretty sure that John Hippie Dude was in the room and Lynn. I don't remember anyone else at the time. And I decided I had dial-up. I had dial-up, and so when I tried talking, so everyone used to say that they couldn't hear me, and there were a lot of guys that used to come to Vonar, and I remember them all, everyone giving me instructions on what to do so that I wouldn't have my sound going in and out. Well, I had dial-up, but I didn't know. I didn't know anything. So I also decided, I was someone that did a lot of service in AA, and at the time I was, keeping together a 5-day-a-week noon-hour group in AA, and I was in there every day, and I was not only the person that got people to chair the meeting. I was the person that bought the medallions. I was the person that did the anniversaries. I was the person that ordered everything. I was the person that brought everything. No one would volunteer. So I decided, I'm in a new 12-step program. I'm going to sit back and do nothing. I'm going to do nothing. So, as a result, I sat there for one whole day, and I did nothing. As I heard, people chairing the meetings and blah, blah, blah. However, remember I had, and it was really annoying to me, because they would ask you to read the steps of traditions, the third step prayer, or the promises. I couldn't find the promises in the book. So I always volunteered with my sound going in and out to read the steps, the traditions, or the prayer. I grew to love the third step prayer because it spoke to me. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And I just loved that prayer. And I don't love prayer, so, that's nice that I loved a prayer. And but I decided that was the only service I was going to do, because I wasn't going to talk, because I knew if I talked, then I'd end up doing a lot more service. So if I just could keep my mouth shut, I'd be all right. Well, the second or third day that I was here, I was dazzled because there were all these women with recovery in the other fellowship. Because, see, in my hometown, there's, one other woman that had 1 year more than me, and about 5 other women that were a clique that all had the same sponsor, and they never talked to anyone else or ever let anyone else in. I never had any women to reach out to. And here I came here, and these people had 30 years and 25 years and, you know, all this time. And so I was dazzled to listen to people with all this time that knew recovery. And the second or third day I was here, someone sent me an IM. And I was in shock, because I decided this person was going to steal my identity. And I was so afraid to write back to this person, because I just didn't understand anything, and I didn't know anything about computers. And, you know, and of course my sound is going in and out. And anyway, I did write back, and she said to me, "I'm your quit sister." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, I wonder what that is." So I never was close to anyone in AA when I went in. So this was all like new to me. And somehow I wrote back, and we became bosom buddy. And I wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote to her, and she wrote back, and we were connected at the end. We had 3 months. She stopped coming to meetings. So one of my first lessons I learned here was don't put all my eggs in one basket, because I was devastated when she left. I had major enmeshment issues. I would glom on and hold on. And when she left, it was like the end of a relationship. And so I had to learn how to let go all over again. The one thing, smart thing I did do, is that when I had, I quit February the 26th, and Easter was like the second or third week in March, and I knew I was going to be, because I did nothing but sleep and sit with the computer on my lap when I quit for the first month, but I knew that before I went to be with my family, I had to have a sponsor. And so I had listened, you know, and I asked Lynn. Lynn was just like me. She just had the same tone as I did. She had the same thoughts as I did. You know, and I was like, yep, no sense in fighting it. I'm not going to screw around here. I'm just going to do it. No ifs, ands, or buts. And whatever she says, I'm going to do. I never did that. And never had a sponsor that I valued. In AA. But I'm glad, because she's the first person that I went through. It was nice. We did it both a dual AA and nicotine. I used both books. And one of the things she said to me in the beginning, she said, "Okay, what I would like you to do is kind of like tell your smoking story." You know, she says, "If you want to just tell it to me," because I told her I don't like the phone. So I said, "No, I'll write it. I'll write it to you. It doesn't bother me to write." Well, it was 10 parts. She tried stopping me. She said, "Check." She used to say this all the time. "Check, check, stop, check." And I'm like, "What?" And she says, "I don't want this long, just a short story about what your smoking was like." I said, "Listen, if you don't want to read it, don't read it. But this is how I got to do it." And I sent her a part every day, and each part was 3 and 4 pages, type pages, because I just had to talk and talk and talk. And instead of talking here, because I didn't want everyone to know I knew recovery. So instead of talking here, I would write to her and write and write and write and write and write and write. So then as we're going through the steps, you know, if you look in the Nicotine Anonymous book, they have four different ways to do step four. And one of them is to do it by doing a whole story of your nicotine use. And I did that basically with my smoking story. And one was to, they had questions to answer, just a few questions. I didn't like those questions, so I decided I didn't want to do that one. But another one was to go through the book and answer all these questions that they have listed. And now the fifth edition has like 91 questions to answer. Well, when I was in here, it was 194 questions. And you know, when you read those questions and they're one sentence answer. Well, I just started with the first question that I wrote a page. And it's like, stop, you're not going to do more steps this way. I said, look it, I'm teaching your reading skills. I'm improving your vocabulary. And she says, no, you're doing this the AA way, you know, make the columns and you know, and I'm like, oh, I hate doing it that way. I've done it that way so many times and I have the same list of the same people and all the same commitments. And, you know, and they've been listed there for 20 years, and now I'm going to list them again, you know. But, I wish you said. The only time I had real trouble with the steps was when it got to the seventh step, when it says, you know, you say this prayer, and then your character defects are all taken away. Well, that to me is such bull. Because I knew me, and even though I was here for a year, and even though Lynn was my sponsor, and she told me many times to shut my mouth, I can't tell you, she told me she did not want me chairing more than four meetings a week. I said, but Lynn, nobody's opening the room. She says, we have a group conscience decision that you don't chair more than four meetings a week. So you stick to that. That's a group conscience decision. I said, well, nobody opens. She says, listen, nobody wants to hear your voice all the time. You just you don't open more than four a week. And I'm like, okay, you know. And I just let her, you know, whatever she said, I said, great. And there was another woman in the room that had 6 months more than me, but Lynn was also her sponsor. And I would bitch to her about Lynn. She's a pain in the ass, you know, and she's telling me this, and she's full of this, and... But I never told Lynn that, you know, but I love telling this other woman so that I could just get it out. You have to have a sense of humor when you're here and you're going through this, because if you don't, you go crazy, because this is such a change to really do it and to really be honest and to really put your best foot forward. It's really change. And so I never told Lynn off. I never told her, you know, she knew me like a book, you know, I was so much like her. And when I had 3 years, let me go back, in 2010, which I had a year and 4 months, I went to my first conference, and in the other fellowship, I never went to anything. I never traveled and went to anything, you know. But I was real close to I had a number of sponsees with a year and a half, a year and 4 months. And the conference was in Arizona. And one of them invited me to come to her house, and she would go to the conference with me. She would drive to the conference from her house. And so I did that. And it was 2010. And I was voted in to be a delegate, which we'll be voting for next Sunday, and I had no idea what a delegate was, but I was voted in because I had time. And at this conference, I met the founders of this program of Vonar, Roz and John, and I also met Amy. Cyber, along with sponsees that I had, Well, I should add that this was in May, and in the beginning of May, my mom was put on hospice, and I decided to travel anyway because I had spent 14 years taking care of both of my parents, and I deserved a break. And so even though she was put on hospice, I decided to go away for a week because I knew the next month was going to be hell for me, and I did. And at the conference, I completely fell apart. My sponsees, I had two young sponsees that were there, and they just got involved with everyone and helped with things. And I was outside by the pool crying because my sponsees were more than was with their people skills. And they could just jump in and be a part of. And I was out crying. And, you know, when I look back at it, I texted one of them and said, I'm outside the pool if you're looking for me. And they came out after there was a dinner or a brunch, and they came out to the pool to find out what the heck was going on with me. And I just felt like a complete misfit. And when I look back at this, a lot of it was I was so jealous because they were so outgoing and so easy to get along with people. And I was supposed to be their sponsor. But I also realized that probably my mom's diagnosis and close to death was probably the reason that I really fell apart. But I had a wonderful time being with these women. I met three of my sponsees. One was very quiet like me, so we are quieter. Quiet like me. Well, not as sure of herself. Yeah, anyway, but that was the beginning of this. Doing service outside of Vonar for me, and I didn't do anything. The next year, I continued chairing meetings. I chaired four meetings a week. I was always opening. I was always telling everyone. Oh, when I had 1 year, I forgot this. When I had 1 year of recovery, we were at a group conscience meeting, and I used to do nothing but fool around at group conscience meetings and, you know, just like the kid in the back of the class and writing to everyone and half paying attention, have no idea what's going on, nor did I care because I didn't care about the organization. And all of a sudden I hear them making sure that a person could have 11 months instead of a year to be the secretary. And I'm like, what? And I start writing to Cindy because Cindy was ahead of me at the time. She had a year. And she had more time than me. And I found her and I said, hey, are you going to be secretary? She said, oh, I would be honored to be secretary. I said, oh good. I was, because I was thinking that Lynn was going to nominate me to be secretary, and I'm glad she's going to nominate you instead. I think she was Cindy's sponsor too. I don't really know. And so they voted it in, and next I'm nominating Chick to be secretary. I'm like with my mouth open. Well, my real response for my entire life about the secretary position is that this is a position that a man should hold instead of a woman, because it's so stereotyped towards women. So I really think that a man should hold this position instead of me. But I didn't say that to Lynn. I mean, that was so different for me to not just tell her my thoughts and my beliefs. I just said, yes, I'll accept the nomination. And I became secretary. Now, I had never, ever, ever been secretary because I had been representatives in union and even in high school. But, you know, a secretary has to sit there and take notes. They can't shoot their mouth off. So for 2 years, my first 2 years in group conscience, I didn't say anything, not one word, because I was busy being secretary. So the next year, I decided to go to the conference again. And this time it was in Baltimore, I think. And I walked in, and I walked in, and I didn't make plans to meet anyone there, I don't think. But I walked in, and they used to have a room with just meetings, not business stuff. And I walked in this room, and this woman looked at me and just started crying. She said, and she's crying. I'm looking at her. I have no clue who this person is. And of course, it was one of our members here, because I always have pictures on the site, so everyone knew what I looked like. But I never paid attention to anyone else's pictures, because that would be taking the focus off of me. Why would I look to see what anyone else looked like? So anyway. And the year after that, I don't know if it was that one or the year after that, I went to the next World Service Conference, and I was sitting next to this woman who still comes to meetings, and I was sitting next to her, and she owned a business. And I said, I really kind of want to, I think I want to do something here. I said, do you think I could be treasurer? I'm pretty good with money, Maybe I should be treasurer. I've always been treasurer of everything. I've done other jobs. She says, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, but look at all these papers and all these balance sheets and all stuff. I don't know anything with this. And she says, oh, I own a business, and I don't know what it means either. I said, so you think I could do it? She said, sure. So along the way, I had changed sponsors because I was also going to Al-Anon. And I wanted someone that had Al-Anon background to be my sponsor. So my sponsor was at this conference, and I asked her, I said, do you think that I'm far enough along to be able to be treasurer here, volunteer for it? Because they were always begging for people to volunteer. And she says, oh, sure you can. I'm going to nominate you, which she did, And I became treasurer on the board of Nicotine Anonymous. I had no clue what I was doing. And guess who taught me how to be treasurer? Gary. Gary was the treasurer before me. So he taught me how to be treasurer. And he had this, he sat down with me and we spent hours. And I got to tell you, I was treasurer for 3 years. And when I left, I knew less than when I went in how I did that position. Absolutely. No clue. But you know what? I'm telling you all this service stuff because this is how I stayed. This is how I stayed sober. This is how I did it and became more involved. I found it all so interesting. And along the way, what really happened with Amy as my sponsor and doing a lot of Al-Anon stuff, we really worked on me and my attitudes and me and my quick mouth, and me learning how to stop, drop, and roll, and learning how to not have to say something back every time someone said it. See, smoking allowed me to behave better, because with cigarette in mouth, I didn't say as many pointed negative things to people. Without that smoke screen, and I got into that part of it, the smoke screen part of the not smoking, when I didn't have that screen, there was no filter on my mouth. And I mean, I always was mouthy. My mother was much worse than I am, but, I just felt so uncomfortable because I didn't know how to get away from people by going outside to smoke or blow smoke at people. And really, that's what it was like for me. I was an angry person. And it just was so difficult for me. I had, every single year, I had big disagreements with people in the rooms. And then I would be so ashamed of myself because I said the things I said. So I would back down and like start over and be quiet and then try. It was so hard to learn how to get along with people without nicotine. I struggled for 2 years of crying. I got into these service things just to keep me busy because I didn't know how to live life without nicotine. And so, you know, and I just kept on telling myself, don't go to so many meetings. Just go to one meeting a day. But I couldn't stop. I couldn't stay away because I didn't know what else to do. What do I do next? It was always there. What do I do next? And for anyone that's just quitting, I don't care. It is really, it's really uncomfortable. And no matter what you say and no matter what anyone says to you, I was angry when anyone ever suggested anything to me. And I reoccurringly had the same difficulties with people. And I need to explain this because before I got into recovery, I was a self-will-run riot person. There were no rules. There was no filter from my mouth. I just did everything I wanted to do. I basically ran my household. So, there was no filter on me. So learning how to be in partner with people and learning how to share, not take front stage, learning how to not so egotistical and self-centered, that's what my recovery has been about. It's really been about putting on my big girl pants. And every time I have I used to tell people all the group conscious decisions, one right after another. Every single meeting, I was always pointing out something or another because I never followed rules before. So when I came into recovery, these group conscious decisions kept me sober. It gave me something to concentrate on and it gave me structure. And, you know, the whole God thing isn't a big part with me at all, but good orderly direction. And for me, it wasn't good orderly direction. It was total obsession with, because I was secretary, I knew all the group conscience decisions because it was my responsibility to post them back then. And I felt like nobody else knew anything that was going on. So if I didn't tell everyone all these things, they wouldn't know. So I just appointed myself to be the person with the mouth and sharing all these things with people. And I tell you this, and I'm looking at the time because I'm realizing now I need to cut it quick. I'm telling you that because this last year, this ninth year of not smoking has been major change for me because I'm working so hard on letting it go. For the first time since I've been here, I stepped away from having any service position because, you know, I'm not in charge here. You can call me an icon. I call myself a pain in the ass because, you know, I don't need to be telling everyone what to do because I keep on learning about these. I keep on learning about the traditions, which is what my focus has been on this year. And I keep on learning about being a team player instead of telling everyone what to do. In this last year, I mean, you guys have no idea how hard I have worked on letting go. And I just keep on thinking, you know, I let go of alcohol in 1988. I let go of my dad when he died. I let go of two relationships. I let go of nicotine in 2008. I let go of my mom when she died. I let go of nicotine and you know, when I finally got, oh, and yes, Tropical Storm Irene came in my house and took the whole bottom layer in 2011. My whole life has been about letting go. And I needed to focus more on letting go of those character defects that were supposed to be taken away when I say that prayer. I don't need to be the director. And, you know, and there's a passage in the other fellowship that talks about all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players, and I want everyone to do things my way. And so in the last year, I worked so hard on that behavior. Now, you know, I'm not a youngin'. I'm retired. I had a career for 34 years. You know, why would I be worried about this at age 66? You know, it's like, why is this so important? Because those behaviors are what made me want to smoke and use other stuff. And learning how to be a different person, to learning about acceptance and love and patience and tolerance, that's my spiritual journey. My spiritual journey is to be a better person. It's not anything I did quickly. And 29 years of recovery, and here I am. 29 years trying to become a better person, not to be liked, because I'm loved by many, many people. And you know, my sister-in-law called me tonight and asked me to come stay with them because it's raining and the wind blowing. And this is the house with all the smoking and drinking. And she didn't want me to be alone in this storm. So I am loved. Believe me, I am loved. I have so many friends and such a large family. And I meet people here, and I have so many sponsees that I just absolutely love this point in my life. I never had this love feeling before. And my sponsees teach me so many things. You know, going back, I would have said, okay, why don't you write this? Blah, 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 you know. And I just don't care about all that anymore. But what I care about is someone be feeling comfortable in quitting smoking and knowing that it's okay. And it's okay to complain about what everybody else does, because we all have our little quirky things. And you know, and I just, you know, I just can't stress to all of you here how difficult how much I want to be a better person and to fill my life with love and patience and tolerance and acceptance, and to be able to help anyone that walks into the room. You know, right now I'm so dazzled by the people that I help. And all of my helping is via email, because I can have a much better filter via email than on the phone, because I can very easily, you know, the email part has really helped me to write something, erase it, and be patient and tolerant and accepting instead of thinking I have the answers. These are the things that made me want to smoke. That's the low self-esteem, coming off like a bulldozer, but yet beating myself up every time I pointed something out to people. So that's my story. And there's, you know, there's a lot of things that happened to me in my life. One of my favorite things is forgiveness. If I haven't forgiven all the people that I had come across in life and done harm to me, if I didn't have the opportunity to forgive and to set people free, you know, I wouldn't have had the opportunities to grow that I've had in the last 29 years of recovery, and especially the 9 years here. The typing has helped me become a different person, and I feel so blessed, so blessed to have had the opportunity to be with all of you 31 people that are in this room, to share my experience, strength, and hope at meetings. I try so hard to not raise my hand at meetings because I want everyone else to have the opportunity to say the things that they need to say. And, you know, I did a lot of writing to Lynn and to Amy. And they, and the last year, I have not exploded once. That is major to me. That is so major. And I feel like I'm getting this. Do I have all the answers? Absolutely not. I just have my recovery and how I got to where I am. And I just wish every single one of you the peace and happiness and contentment that I have received by coming here to Bonar. Thank you.